Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is the next in a series looking at the financial implications of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on the global economy. And in today's episode, I want to talk about bricks. And I don't mean bricks and mortar and building houses, nothing to do with that. BRICS is the acronym that stands for a collaboration between Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. And it's just been announced that Iran and Argentina have applied to join BRICS. And in this video, I want to go through the implications of all of this. If you've been following the postings that I've made, you'll know that Russia is currently in the process of changing all of its global relationships. Because of the sanctions that have been applied by the Western world and the declarations that most countries in Europe and North America have made about not wanting to do any business with Russia going forward, Russia is now looking for new trading partners. And the BRICS relationship has been established for more than a decade now, and it looks like Russia is trying to develop that further. So in this episode, we'll have a look at exactly what BRICS is. We'll go through how important all of the countries that are currently members are. We'll then have a look at Argentina and Iran and what they could add. We'll talk about what progress BRICS has made so far. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary as to what I think the implications of this are for the global economy. So before we get started, I'm going to ask you for a thumbs up at some point during this video if you're enjoying the content. And also please subscribe. I'm getting quite close to 100,000 now, still some way to go. But if you're a regular viewer and you haven't subscribed yet, please hit that button now. Don't forget, I always include chapters here. So if you're not interested in a particular section, it's really easy to skip over it. If you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find the usual links. The original concept for the BRICS collaboration dates back to 2006, when a meeting was held as an offshoot from a United Nations meeting between Brazil, Russia, India, and China. Over the course of the next few years, discussions were held between these four nations to set up a diplomatic arrangement between the countries that was not to include the USA or any of the countries from Europe. The culmination of these discussions was a full-scale summit in Yekaterinburg in Russia in June 2009. The main focus of these discussions was to focus on the global financial situation and to work out how the four nations could have more influence and involvement in global affairs. And one of the main topics was the dominance of the US dollar as the recognised global currency. In 2010, South Africa submitted a formal application to join the alliance and officially joined on the 24th of December that year. On the 14th of April 2011, South Africa joined what was then the third annual summit meeting in China. And annual meetings have been held every year since, with each country rotating, hosting the event. As a result of the COVID pandemic, the last three conferences have all been held by video conference, with the most recent taking place in June 2022. So let's have a look at the relative size and importance of the five countries that currently make up BRICS. This table shows the global ranking of countries by GDP in 2021. China currently has the second largest economy in the world, with a GDP of over $16.8 trillion. India is the sixth largest country with GDP of just under $3 trillion. Russia was ranked at number 11 and Brazil at number 12, and both had GDP in excess of $1.6 trillion in 2021. And South Africa is actually much smaller than the other nations, with a GDP of just over $415 billion. So collectively, these five nations have GDP of over $23 trillion. So it's a significant amount of economic power. This table shows a list of the largest countries in the world. As you can see, China is ranked number one, and India is ranked number two, and both have over 1.4 billion people. Brazil is currently ranked as the seventh largest country in the world with over 215 million. Russia, the ninth largest with over 145 million. And once again, South Africa is the outlier amongst these nations, is ranked at number 24 and has a population of over 60 million. In total, these five countries have a combined population of over 3.2 billion people, which equates to around 41% of the world's total population, which is now approaching 8 billion people. In June 2012, the BRICS nations agreed to pledge $75 billion to the IMF to help emerging and developing nations. However, the terms of this pledge required the IMF to change its voting structure. The way that the IMF currently works is that larger nations have to donate larger amounts of capital, However, they are given a proportionate amount of voting. So the larger countries have a bigger say in what gets agreed. And the BRICS nations wanted to change this concept. They wanted more parity and more say for the smaller countries from the world. Agreement could not be reached with the IMF, and in March 2013, the BRICS nations decided to establish its own international financial institution. And the idea was to create a new bank that would challenge the established institutions such as the IMF and the World Bank that were dominated by the established Western world. The BRICS leaders held a meeting in St. Petersburg, at which it was agreed that China would commit $41 billion to the new bank, Brazil, India and Russia would invest $18 billion, and South Africa $5 billion. As part of this arrangement, China proposed that it held a managing role and that the reserve capital of the new bank should be held in China. Negotiations continued over the next year. It was ultimately agreed that all five nations would have an equal stake in the new bank and that they would commit an equal amount of capital. It was agreed that the initial amount of capital for the bank would be $100 billion with a further $100 billion in reserve. And in the summer of 2014, the new development bank was created. In order to fund this capital and also to make a statement about the new collaboration, all of the countries involved reduced their holding of US treasuries, with Brazil trimming its holdings to $261 billion, India $77 billion, China $1.25 trillion, and South Africa $10.3 billion. The mission statement for the new development bank is to support infrastructure and sustainable development efforts in BRICS and other underserved emerging economies for faster development through innovation and cutting-edge technology. The bank partners with nations through capital and knowledge, achieving development goals with transparency and empathy, and creating an equal opportunity for the development of all countries. So the predominant focus for this capital is to help improve infrastructure and technology in the five member nations. To date, the NDB has approved over 80 projects in the five original member countries. These projects have a total value of over $30 billion and are in sectors from transport, water and sanitation to clean energy and digital and social infrastructure. The deals to support these infrastructure projects are very similar to what we've seen from the IMF and the World Bank. So they're structured as a loan, usually with a very low rate of interest, but it does have a repayment profile, and there will come a point where the funding for this project does have to be paid back. Notably, 27% of the bank's approved projects are denominated in the local currency of the respective borrowing member rather than US dollars. This percentage is much higher than we see for deals from the IMF and similar agencies, and its detrimental impact on the creditworthiness of project cash flows. And I think this is a really clever way of structuring these deals, and is quite an important point, because if you borrow $1 billion from the IMF for whatever reason, and then your currency suddenly devalues by 50%, so it's worth half of what it was previously, then in relative terms, it's going to cost you double to pay that money back to the IMF because your currency is now worth half of what it was previously, but the loan that you've taken is in US dollars and that doesn't change. By putting these loans into the local currency, it takes account of volatility. So even if your currency does devalue by 50%, you still only owe the original amount that you borrowed. If you borrow 1 billion rupees, for example, it doesn't really matter what the rupee is worth against the dollar because you only ever have to pay back 1 billion rupees. You don't have to convert it back into dollars before settling the loan. At the 2015 BRICS summit in Russia, it was agreed by the five member nations that they would establish a new international payment system that would compete with the SWIFT international payment system. Now, the timing of this proposal by Russia was obviously very interesting. In 2014, Russia annexed Crimea and faced a number of international financial sanctions. So Russia was already aware that there was a chance that they could be locked out of the SWIFT system, and they wanted to set up an alternative system that would give them the ability to make payments if that did happen. Now, as you'll be fully aware if you follow the channel, following Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Russia was thrown out of the SWIFT system. Most of the financial institutions in Russia no longer have access to that system. And unfortunately for Russia, they didn't manage to establish an alternative system. They didn't have anything in place. They tried to set it up 7 years ago, but unfortunately for them, China and India have their own systems. China have established CIPS, which is the cross-border interbank payment system. And India has set up the structured financial messaging system. So neither of those countries really wanted to collaborate with Russia to set up a combined international payment system, which is a bit of a shame for Russia, because if they'd done that when they asked everybody to do it, then they wouldn't have had as many problems as they've just had following the sanctions that have been imposed. So I guess this shows that BRICS is not the perfect solution just yet. So it's just been announced that Iran and Argentina have both applied to join BRICS. And this is a really interesting development, particularly in respect of Iran's application. Iran has large oil reserves. It's the seventh largest country in the world in terms of the amount of oil that it's sitting on. But Iran was one of the first countries that ran into problems as a result of sanctions being applied by the Western world. Iran was originally sanctioned by the USA back in 1979. And over the last 40 years, it's faced a variety of sanctions, most recently as a result of the drive to develop its own nuclear weapons. The economic implications of these sanctions for Iran have been devastating because the markets that they can now sell their oil into are very limited. So they've got massive reserves, but they just don't have a market. And by joining the BRICS group, that would give them access to all of those nations, because this would legitimize their trading relations with India, China, Russia, South Africa, and Brazil. And as you'll know if you follow the channel, India and China are two of the biggest export markets for oil. So this would be a great economic idea from Iran's point of view. Argentina is a slightly different story. The Argentinian economy has been in disarray for the last few years. We've got extremely high rates of inflation. And unfortunately for Argentina, they're not really being bailed out by the rest of the world. So by reaching out to BRICS, they're looking for somebody to give them the support to bring their economy back on track and to help them to become a powerhouse in terms of global economics. So you can see why Iran and Argentina are both interested in joining BRICS. And from Russia's point of view, this looks like perfect timing, because they're now struggling to find trading partners globally. And by having more members to BRICS, it means it legitimizes all of the countries that they're able to do business with. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video because we've been talking about what Russia's options are over the last few months. They've been locked out by a lot of the Western world. All of the sanctions are now in place and statements have been made that nobody wants to deal with Russia. So Russia now has to change its trading relationships. It needs to find new trading partners. And the BRICS relationship looks like the perfect setup for Russia. They already have identified India and China as two of the biggest markets that they want to sell their energy into. And by adding more countries into this alliance, it gives them a powerful group to be able to sell their products to. And in terms of GDP and population, this is a significant part of the world. There's more than 40% of the world's population included in BRICS, and it represents over $23 trillion of GDP. So on paper, this looks like the perfect relationship from Russia's perspective. However, it remains to be seen whether or not this is actually a genuine working relationship. We've seen so far with the new development bank that it's taken a long time to get everything in place and to get agreements. And China initially wanted the upper hand. It wanted to be the controlling partner in the whole arrangement. They've subsequently agreed that it will be an equal relationship. But the big question is whether or not China will be happy going in on an equal basis with Russia and the other partners. Back in 2015, Russia tabled the idea of setting up an alternative to SWIFT. They knew at that time that there was a possibility that Russia could be excluded from SWIFT, and so they wanted to have an alternative system to be able to fall back on. Now, China didn't go with that idea. They decided to set up their own system. So they didn't want to do anything in collaboration with Russia. And it's been reported since that Russia is now using that system. So this, I think, is an example of where China goes into the relationship, but actually wants to hold some more power than the other partners. And it will be fascinating to see whether or not China, Russia, and India can agree to hold hands and have an equal relationship, or whether it transpires that one of them actually wants to be the leading force. And if that does happen, then I think you're going to have problems. The other issues that we've got with regards to BRICS is that these are all emerging and developing economies. So that's great in terms of they're going to be growing rapidly, but all of these countries have their own problems and challenges. The sheer size of the population in China and India mean that they have to rely on imports for a variety of things. And at the moment, both of those countries are sitting on the fence. So they're able to have a relationship with the Western world, and they're also able to have a relationship with Russia. And that's working very well for them right now. But if we get to the point where BRICS becomes a challenger to the rest of the Western world, if the Western world says, actually, the sanctions that we've imposed on Russia need to be upheld by China and India. We don't care that you're in the BRICS relationship. We're saying that if you're doing business with Russia, then that means that we're going to apply those sanctions against you also. Then that's going to be a real problem for China and India. If they have to choose which side they go to, then if they go all in on BRICS, they will be in the same position that Russia's in right now, where they will need to access technology and other things that are only available right now in the Western world. And that's a big call for India and China to make. So whilst BRICS does look like a fantastic opportunity from Russia's perspective, it's not going unnoticed. The rest of the world can see what's happening. And if BRICS does start to develop into a more powerful relationship, then I think we will see the secondary sanctions starting to be applied against India and China. And then the question is, will they want to continue with the BRICS deal, or will they want to just go back to operating independently and looking after themselves? And my guess on that matter is that it works better for India and China to stay on the fence. If they can stay in a situation where they can deal with Russia and they can also deal with the rest of the world, then that works perfectly for them because they can just buy things that work best for them. If there's a lower price from Russia, they'll take it. If there's a lower price from the Western world, they'll take it. What they don't want to do is go all in and exclude themselves from other trading relationships. So I think ultimately, whilst Russia wants to develop BRICS and wants to make it a competing force against the Western world, I don't think India and China will see it in the same way. They're using it to their advantage right now, but if it becomes detrimental, then they'll be happy to walk away from that deal. But we've got a really interesting situation, and I think Iran are being smart. They're currently completely excluded from the rest of the world in terms of selling their oil. So they want to develop relations with people who are happy to buy their oil. And that will be beneficial to Iran's economy ultimately. So I'll keep you posted on any further news and developments as and when they happen here. If you've liked what I've said today, then please give me that thumbs up and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.